Welcome to QuakeCast, the podcast for id Software's classic Quake and the games it inspired.
Hello, Quakers, and welcome to another episode of the QuakeCast. I'm RC, and of course, joining me today is...
Dump Truck DS, I'm here in the flesh.
Here in the flesh, in the voice, you get to listen to his luscious tones. But unfortunately for you guys today, you're only going to hear from me and Dump Truck, so there's no interview today.
Unless we start doing Kraythor voices, like, what are you doing?
Yes, it's time to suck the tit. Yep. Oh, man. What a great episode that was.
That was so much fun. We had a good time. Our guest this week had to cancel. Unfortunately, had a last-minute commitment that they had to jump to, so we will bring that guest, that mystery guest, back at a later point.
Who could it be? I'll never tell.
No. Secret is safe.
I'm locking my lips right now. You can't tell, but...
So we are going to talk Quake today. We're going to talk video games. We are going to talk what we're up to on our channels. What else are we talking about today?
Well, the most important topic at the very end was a topic that was submitted by Muzzboz, who is a... someone who sort of lurks in the Quake community. He's a real good guy. He's commented on a few of my Quake Grave videos and stuff. But he had a question. It's a very, in my opinion, it's a strange question because it's a little bit loaded if you think about it. But it's the idea of like what makes Quake so alluring and so fun and keeps us playing it all these years later. And so I think we're going to touch on that and see, what our thoughts are on that. And of course, once we get to that topic, we... definitely would love anybody else to submit an email or a Discord message about why they think Quake is so good all these years later. But first, Dump Truck, yeah. Let's talk about the Quake community here a little bit. What's everyone been up to?
I keep my finger on the pulse of the Quake community. Obviously,
how many fingers?
Just two, and well, I actually have to hold it by the wrist, so three technically. I'm on Funk every day, and obviously we have Discord as well, and my Discord is almost up to 500 users, and I.
Nice.
I looked in the settings and I kind of looked at, okay, I was looking to prune it maybe. And I looked in and I'm like, oh, there's only 86 people that haven't checked in the last, I think it's 30 days. So that means there's 400-ish people that are checking in at least, or at least have it still in their, in their dashboard.
Right.
And they haven't, they popped onto it here and there, which is kind of cool. It wasn't what I was expecting. I was expecting, 250 people haven't been here in 30 days. So I like that, I'm not the analytics wizard that other people listening probably are, but I find that stuff really interesting and fascinating. And as far as YouTube, I try not to let it influence the videos too much because there's so much data. It's like, well, I'm not doing this for money anyway. Who cares? But
right.
it's still an interesting subject. But so I am like digressing there a little bit. But so the things that I've been taking a look at are some new mappers. And I got to say, there's this crazy influx of people. And I really do think it's probably kind of an after effect of Quake 1.5. I think just a lot of people are checking Quake out again. And therefore, there's new mappers coming in. Because I'm telling you, I'm getting... way more new users now, or I'm just noticing it, than a couple weeks ago. And people are making maps and showing screenshots, and it's just really exciting because people are talking about coding now, which is great. So there's a lot going on. So first of all, Mod Jam is the big kind of release. We talked about that in the last episode, but it's finally out, and I've checked out about three out of the, eight mods. And they're really fun. It's really cool. I highly recommend anyone hearing this, go download it. It's a collection of different folders that you launch as mods. They all have readmes you can kind of check out. Some of them are just super simple. Some are funny. And some add, new monsters and new weapons and things. So
which one was your favorite Dump Truck out of the, don't give them all away, but
no,
give us one.
I gotta be honest with you. I don't have a favorite. They're all really, they're all really impressive. Just the three, I've played three of them and I've seen an additional one that, because it was on a stream and I happened to catch, I think it was Bal playing through it. So, and that was Shambler Knot's mod where he kind of has like a spell book and ice crystals and things like that. So they're all cool. I don't have a favorite yet because I haven't played all of them, but I got to say, I have one word or two words for everybody: baby shamblers. That's all I'm going to say.
It's funny you say that. I'm looking at the screenshot for that right now, and it just cracks me up.
Oh, and it's funny in the game, too. So the people have to check it. And it's from our pal Bloodshot, which is that's just a funny mod that he, I guess, put together. I don't know. I didn't read the read.
That's great. But that's so cool. And people can look forward to me covering that pretty soon on the Quake Grave as well. So
yeah, definitely. Oh, it'll be right up your alley. And again, you might have to do multi-part episode, just so you know, because there are maps involved. And like the first one, I'm like, oh, I'm just going to check out this mod. And I was playing it for, you know, 15 minutes because the map had like 115 enemies or something crazy. And that was,
No kidding.
That's Ish's mod, which I won't go into detail, but cool map. It's a remake of another map from another game. And then he added some, you know, fun gameplay features and things. So you'll enjoy it. It's fun.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
There's also, as far as Quake news, there is also, let's see, The Refinery by Shade Master. Is it Shades? Shades Master,
it looks like.
Shades Master, correct. And I've been following the development of that on the Quake Mapping Discord, and I played a beta of it. And I have not played the final release yet, but it's getting good reviews on Funk. So that's
cool, it looks like a cool little base map there. And I'm actually been very surprised by the influx of single releases the past month.
Yeah, it's about time. I've kind of made a rule that I'm not going to do any more speed maps in 2019. I'm hoping not to be able to refrain from doing it. But yeah, there's a speed mapping thing going on right now. There's all kinds of stuff going on in the community, which is exciting. You know, it's cool to see all this action.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, within the past few weeks, you've had The Refinery, which you mentioned. You had, what's it called? East Ardone? Is that how you say it?
I think it's Ardone, yeah.
Ardone by Mortal Max, which looks really cool. You have Dreary Disposition by Albert. And
Egyptoagula.
Egyptoagula, yes, by Q-Master, which looks very, very cool.
Oh, you haven't played that yet?
Nope, I'm setting up a show coming up soon to play through all of these single releases. So
that map is insane. Just you see the screenshots there. It's kind of this floating Egyptian upside down pyramid thing. That's crazy. I beta tested that, and that map kicked my butt. It was really, but it's really fun. It has all kinds of fun things, and that's by Q-Master, and it uses his Keep mod. Which I don't know if are you familiar with the Keep mod?
No, I didn't know that he actually had a mod.
Oh, wait till you hear this. So it's still like, I don't know if he considers it alpha or beta or what, but what it does is it takes all the monsters, it takes the code base from Arcane Dimensions, and it starts there. And so you have all the Arcane Dimensions monsters and weapons and power-ups. Mm-hmm. And then it takes the weapons and power-ups from pretty much every major mod from the last, I'm assuming, 20 years. So you'll have things from like Zerstörer, you'll have things from the mission packs, and I'm talking monsters and weapons and power-ups.
And, oh, wow.
Yeah, and before I did my mod that I'm working on still, I really looked to this thing as like, oh my God, this is crazy because you can mix and match all these monsters. So it's still early. He's still working on it. I think it's pretty solid. And this map kind of shows that off where you have different weapons and different, you know, monsters, but I could see people just going crazy with this, mappers and, you know, but I mean, there's, I don't want to say hundreds of enemies, but dozens and dozens of enemies. So
very cool.
Yeah.
So coming soon is a Keep speed map pack, maybe.
Yeah. I don't know.
That'd be cool.
He's still developing it because there's some things he needs to work out. It's certainly playable and it works and you could flat out start making maps for it now, but he needs to do a development kit and kind of explain what everything does. He's got this crazy spreadsheet that tracks all the monsters and power-ups and where they're from and what the status is. So it's pretty it's pretty far along, but yeah, I always say he lives up to his name because like putting all that code together must be just his nightmare. So
he is the Q master.
Yeah, correct. So that's something for people to kind of keep their eyes out, for in the near future.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, I look forward to seeing more on that. And I definitely am looking forward to jumping into that map pretty soon here on the channel. So speaking of channels, Dump Truck, I've noticed that you've been doing some new stuff on your channel as of late. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. In this, I had already kind of planned on kind of taking a step back from the tutorials because, you know, I'm not an expert. I know only so much. And so I think anything moving forward would be like expert level things. I mean, I've covered a lot of stuff. There's a few things on the to-do list that I haven't done. I've got to do a compiling video because that is the number one issue for new users. So I will be kind of doing that in the near term. But I wanted to step away from tutorials because there's a lot of them. I mean, you could sit down. I don't know how long they run, but I look at it, the list and go, wow, there's like 33 or 34 or however many there are tutorials.
So yeah, like, that's a ton.
That'll keep you busy for a long time. That'll get you mapping. And so kind of mission accomplished there.
Nice.
But I want to do more content where, you know, and I don't want to do Let's Plays because as we all know, I'm not the greatest player.
Know that for sure.
And that's a role that you fulfill. You really dive deep. You have a good time. You're fun. You're compelling and fun to watch. So I'd be like, nah, look at that nail thing over there. You know, I'm not that great. So
well, that's what I do. I just am able to like cover it up, you know, like, oh no, I'm actually smart.
Where's not the true secret? but anyway, so I've always liked playing new mappers work. So I kind of am building that into my, content stream there. So I have a new series called, New Mapper Showcase, and it won't be on a regular basis, but you know, as things come up and time permitting, I will go ahead and play through someone's map and then maybe point out good things, point out bad things, things to look out for, and all in the hopes of A, giving people credit for their hard work and encouragement. And then B, just, you know, people learning like, oh, he did this in his map. I will avoid doing that in my map. So things like that. But it was funny. The first two maps I played were East Ardon and Dreary Disposition. Or wait, no, it wasn't East Ardon. I don't think I played that one. Which Blackened Call was the other one. So Blackened Call and Dreary Disposition. And the funny thing is they're really, really good maps that didn't have that. I mean, they were like, there's nothing to complain about and go, ooh, I don't know, man, that texture. Ooh, yeah, you know, don't want to do that. or those monsters didn't notice me, you know, that kind of thing. No, they were totally fun, playable maps. So I kind of got caught off guard with the quality level. But in the future, and it's not to tear people down. It's like a constructive criticism. So I'll be doing that. And then the other thing I want to do is, or I've already started, is Must Play Quake. And those are really popular. I know you know that you find different content, you know, some people, you know, four people will watch and then you know, another one, 400 people will watch, you know, so the other one I'm working on is Must Play Quake. And that's a little bit more of a documentary type of thing. I don't play through the things. I show a lot of the levels, but I kind of leave the gameplay to the viewer. And I'm just trying to pimp these forgotten gems, you know, or things that, you know, you need to play. So I've only done one and it was the Marcher Fortress, and I'll be doing another one, soon. I'm trying to get a hold of the author so I can ask him some questions, but if I can't get a hold of him, I got to pull the trigger and go ahead. But it's on, Altar of Storms, which is a really classic, map slash mod, by Necros. So, and I'll be doing others. I get suggestions all the time, and I'm just, it's really, those take a while to do because I have to capture all the gameplay. I fly through the levels, and then I want to have some history that maybe even, you know, someone who's been in the community for a long time wouldn't even know. So I'm trying to find those little gems of, information. So people are, you know, so I'm giving some, you know, value here as opposed to just showing the map.
No, for sure. And I got to say, I watched the Marcher Fortress one and I was definitely riveted the whole way through because I'm the kind of guy when I come into the community, like I'm definitely the guy who doesn't know anything. Like I step in and they're like, oh, yeah, so-and-so worked on this and they also did this. And, you know, they took a break and did that. Like some people know the whole history of everybody who's been in the community.
Right.
And it's great. So having these videos come out to give a little bit of background and detail on them and who worked on them and who did what, because you even include like, oh, this includes monsters from this that was previously used in this. And I thought that was so cool because I'm like, oh, wow, this sort of expands the world for myself, too. One of the most interesting things I found, though, was how you were talking about the bell sound that was in the Marcher Fortress and like where that came from and how it was used and stuff like that. I thought the video was great. I thought you did a great job on it. I love all the minor details that are included in it. So I definitely would. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing the next one for sure.
Yeah. And I've got a list of things that are, you know, I kind of can't wait to get to. So, you know, we'll leave that for another day. But I definitely have big plans for this series. I just have to kind of get my workflow down a little better so they don't take quite as long. I'd love to have, and I'm going to throw this out to the community, the listeners out there. I would love to have help on these. I mean, I'm certainly open to collaboration and, what I usually do is say, hey, send me your playthrough so that at least I don't have to play the entire thing and feel like I've 100%ed the level before I do a video. Cause I want to have played it,
right.
Before I start shooting my mouth off, but just finding time to sit down and play like Marcher, it's like 300 enemies. I mean, it's like It's a whole episode.
Yeah.
So, just recording it and doing the flythroughs is time consuming enough. Like those flythroughs I did on that video, it took a couple hours, just to get because it's like shooting a movie. You get trying to, oh, that looks, I bumped the camera,
Oh, totally. You're basically putting a documentary together. So
Yeah, exactly.
It's tough.
So yeah. So if anyone's out there, who wants to do writing or just even playing through maps, you can hit me up on Discord and I'm happy to collaborate with people.
Very cool.
I know you're busy. Otherwise I'd ask you.
I'm so busy. It's ridiculous how busy I am.
We're going to clone ourselves, man.
We're going to have to. I need another one of me to take care of Doom. Another one of me to take care of Quake. Another one of me to take care of the other stuff.
Right.
I would really like another one of me just to go to work. That would be awesome.
Oh, that would be beautiful.
That would be...
Well, I love my job. I actually still look forward to going to my job, but there are days where I'm like, I could be making a map. I could be just chilling. Yep. I could actually do yard work one day. So listen, we talked about my channel, my goodies. Let's hear what is going on with GGRC.
So GGRC, it's been an interesting couple weeks. I finally broke the 1,000 subscriber mark.
Yes.
It only took 5 years, but I did it. And you were actually right on my ass, actually. You are... I was looking at your channel. I was like, oh my God, Dumptruck is so popular. He's like 50 away.
I was going to say, I got to look at it right now and see. Not that we're comparing notes or anything.
No, not at all. I'm actually happy because I'm like, man, because you put out good content. So it's good to see it. Plus, I think it's pretty relatively known that being a Let's Player, it's much harder to garner an audience than it is, if you actually do videos that, have a lot of good information in them and that kind of thing. But yeah, regardless, like I just hit my 1,000 subscribers. So I want to thank everybody who's subscribed. If you haven't, there's still room for you. And of course, over the past month or so, I've actually been doing Let's Play videos for another channel. I've been noticed by another channel. They're called Video Chumps. And they have, let's see, close to 3,000 subscribers. And the guy who runs the channel also runs a website called Video Chems where he puts out reviews and written pieces and that kind of thing. But yeah, he contacted me last year. We started talking and I was doing sort of these Nintendo like indie games, like really short videos. He just wanted to kind of experiment with it. Mm-hmm. But he ended up liking them so much that he extended the invite to say, hey, would you like to cover bigger games and do like actual Let's Plays for them? And I said, yeah, sure. So the past month, I've done a ton of them. It's been quite crazy, and they've all been pretty high profile games too. Like the first one, was Resident Evil 2, the new remake, which is very good, by the way. Yeah. If anybody hasn't played that yet,
I watched that episode, and it was really fun, and it made me. I haven't bought it yet, but my kids were like, oh, they're all over
it. So, they're just like drooling like, oh, this is so good.
I want to play it. I saw enough of your playthrough there. I'm like, oh, yeah, one day soon.
Oh, it's really good. The unfortunate thing is I've been so busy. Like we said, we need to clone ourselves, and I haven't been able to actually get back to it, believe it or not. But there's tons of videos to do, you know, and I got more on the way for Video Chums. And I wanted to let everybody know to go subscribe over there so that way they know when other Let's Plays come up. I definitely post about them in my Discord, too, but I don't think people have, like, made the connection that I'm also kind of working over there, too. And I don't want people to think, you know, I'm leaving GGRC because I'm not leaving the Quake Grave, anything like that. Stuff is still happening. The only thing that may take a hit is the quick save review or checking out videos that I do on my own channel, because a lot of these games that I get, you know, they're usually keys that the publishers or the developers are provided for me. Now that I'm kind of doing the Let's Plays over there for them, it's been interesting because at the same time I got those offers, the keys that I've been getting offers from other publishers and stuff have kind of dried up. So it's almost like kind of fit, you know, it's been like this weird, like easy jump over. Though I will say, if you haven't watched it yet, I would recommend checking out my quick save review for Atlas. If you haven't seen that yet. It's very funny.
Oh, I'll definitely check it out. I saw the subheading and I was like, wow. Okay. I think you're going to
chuckle out of it.
Yeah. Okay. I'll definitely check it out. I saw some Twitch streams of that game and I'm like, I don't know.
It's funny because someone, a very nice person, actually posted a comment on there and was like, hey, great video. You know, they said, you know, there are a lot of shortcomings with this game. But they gave me basically this laundry list of like, if you really want to enjoy this game, this is what you got to do. And I'm like, yeah, but dude, this is what I don't want to read a list of like, you know, what this is what I have to do to get to this point. I'm like, I just want to play the game. You know,
that's on the developers, you know, and the publisher to make sure that the experience is as seamless as possible. I can't even imagine someone releasing something that wasn't just completely tight as a drum. I know software development is insanely difficult, but I mean, the publishers, it's like they shoot themselves in the foot. It's like you release this game and it's not ready and you stick into this weird arbitrary deadline as a publisher, and it's like it's a mistake. I mean, I don't understand why people can't learn unless they want to fail. You know what I mean? Like a lot of these companies are publicly traded and they don't really care about profits. And I saw a video recently, maybe yesterday or the day before, where you were talking about a game and some of its shortcomings. It was the Bowser's the 2D Bowser thing.
Oh, right. Bowser's Inside Story, why it's not selling.
Exactly, why it isn't selling. And I was sitting there thinking to myself, you know, these are publicly traded companies, and if I'm not mistaken, Nintendo's got to be public, I'm sure. But
definitely, yes.
Yeah. So people have to understand that for the most part, publicly traded companies really don't care about profits. They care about the share price and the share value over time. And it's quarter to quarter. So they don't have, I think Japanese companies probably have a better outlook, but they don't really have this long-term goal. It's just about quarter to quarter growth. And so they make these goofy decisions. And I think some of them are like, well, it doesn't matter if it fails. Yeah. It doesn't matter because we need this for tax reasons anyway. So we're going to put this on the sacrifice, you know, we're going to sacrifice this game that we spent all these millions on, but this other one's going to bail us out. Right. So, and that's how it works. It's really strange. Like, you know, the company that I really shouldn't talk about this too much, but the company I work for is obviously publicly traded. And what I work on, we joke about it at the office. It's like, we're a loss leader because there's a back end way down the line that somebody's making money on, but like just day to day, it's like every day, like for the last 2 years, we're thinking, oh, this is where the hammer's going to fall. I'm going to lose my job because we're not making any money. But these companies act on a whole different plane. So I'm sorry, I'm rambling again, but.
No, you're fine. I think that's actually a really good point. And, you know, I did the video that, which is just like five reasons why it's not selling. And a lot of it is very surface level stuff. It's stuff that's pretty obvious. It's a lot because there's always a lot of factors into like why something isn't selling. Right. It's not just one thing, but.
Right. Correct.
It's just really funny because sometimes something controversial like this will pop up and you'll see the comments, and the comments are so off base that you're just like, what are you talking about? No. Like this is, I felt the need to like talk about this, And another video I am going to do in the future is similar to what you're doing for researching Quake maps, is I do find it interesting as to why games don't do better when they're actually a really good game. Mm-hmm. One that I mentioned in that video was Titanfall 2. And Titanfall 2 sold pretty good. I think it overall did like 4 million in sales, but it wasn't up to what EA wanted to sell.
Right.
So they basically said, this was a failure, which is just like, that's ridiculous. It sold 4 million copies. Like, that's a success, right?
Right.
But I guess it depends on how much they spent on the game, right? I don't know.
Correct. And the forecast of like, well, it's Respawn and these guys have this pedigree and they're, you know, lightning in a bottle and we'll do it. And then it's like, oh, right. It didn't sell very well. You know, and the irony is my kids played the first and second game. They loved the second game and they raved about it. But I mean, it's my thing is like, when am I going to play it? But I saw the, NoClip documentary about Half-Life, and they were talking about Titanfall 2 being like one of the greatest, you know, single player campaigns in the last 10 years. And I'm like, oh, well, I got to play it now. So,
I agree. It's really good.
Yeah. So those things, you know, and they do have a long shelf life now too. And, I would assume just like movies, come out but they're really financed over a 10-year period. Like they're seen as an investment for 10 years. Unless something's changed from when I went to film school, but usually like you finance a movie, you have your theatrical run, you have all your ancillary stuff, and it just keeps going on and on and on. And then later you'll see it on a little black and white TV in India or something. So, but there, right. somebody made money on that thing, you know, because of residuals and all that stuff. They track all that stuff. So games are, I would assume, are the same thing. They're like, well, it's AAA, it'll be out, but we'll have it on our platform for years and we'll do sales every once in a while. We'll see spikes in, in the player base and all that stuff. So multiplayer is probably different, but for that stuff, it's just kind of an IP that just sits there and makes money slowly over time. So maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
No, I'm sure there is something to that. It's just crazy how much, you know, the industry. I know a lot of people in the Quake community are more fans of the independent circuit because of that. And you'll see it every day. There's always someone in our community who's like, you know, I hate AAA, blah, blah, blah. They do this, they do that. And it's for good reasons. You know, some of these companies make very odd decisions about, you know, what they're releasing, just like you said, at what time. And you know, they don't care who's involved or, you know, who might lose their job over it.
Right.
You know, it's a crazy world. Every industry is the same, though. It's like whether it's the games industry, movie industry, music industry took a huge hit, you know, 20 years ago. So there's that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's overall, it is, we'll say it's hard for art. That's what it comes down to.
It is really hard. Increasingly, as time goes on, the more corporatized everything gets, it's just crazy. I will say the most fun, you mentioned indie games, the most fun I've had recently, and it's just kind of my time that I can devote to games, this kind of fits in, and I believe I brought it up to you before, is the Pico 8, which is that fantasy console. But there's new games for that every day, and they're things that you can just sit down, pick up, play. Some are better than others. You know, a lot of them are kind of in development, but then you'll see these amazing games that just, you know, have you captivated, have me captivated. A lot of them are clones of things, you know, they're roguelikes or they're platformers and things, but I'm telling you, Pico 8 is so, you don't have to pay for it. You can just go to the website and play the games in HTML5 on your browser. And it works perfectly. It works on your phone. I've never had it not work on multiple computers and devices. So there's that. So you have that, but if you want to develop for it, or if you want a couple extra features, like they curate, you know, a list of, you know, featured games and things like that. And you launch Pico 8, it's like, it's 128 by 128. This is, you know, 16 colors, but you would be amazed at the creativity that people come up with for that platform. It's just, it's stunning. So, you know, I got a little controller hooked up to my PC and, you know, if I've got like, oh, I'm going to go to bed in 20 minutes, I'm going to play a Pico 8 game, you know, and that's for me just perfection, you know? So
that's great. Yeah.
It's very cool. So indie games all the way, in my opinion.
I love indie games.
Yeah,
for sure.
Like I love some AAA franchises, like the Uncharted series. I'm bonkers about, but it takes, you know, I just see all this battle royale and all that stuff, and it's just like everybody jumps on the bandwagon. Even Valve, you know, they did a battle royale version of Counter-Strike, which is bizarre. But
well, speaking of battle royale,
exactly. I was thinking.
Let's talk about a little bit about what we've been playing lately. And what one game that has been huge as of the past couple of weeks, because it was sort of ghost released. It was just like, boom, here it is Apex Legends. So have you had a chance to check out this game yet, Dump Truck?
I have checked you checking it out, but I have not played it. My youngest is playing it like nonstop. He's probably playing it right now. And it definitely piqued my interest for sure, because it was part of that Titanfall universe. And it was that stealth, weird, bizarre, like, boom, here's a game. Respawn, that was kind of a big deal. So,
by the way,
so,
the guys who brought you Titanfall 2, the aforementioned Titanfall 2.
And also, you know, the guys who were involved with COD and kind of bringing that hundreds of millions of gamers all around the world.
Yep, exactly.
So tell me more.
Well, let me tell you. I'll tell you more. Now, I played this for Video Chums. And I did a Let's Play up there because they actually provided me with the Founders Pack code for it, which provides you some of their premium coin and stuff like that. So if you're going into this thinking there won't be loot boxes and stuff, you know, you're mistaken. There's loot boxes and, you know, there's coins to collect and that kind of stuff. But it's all cosmetic. You don't need any of it to enjoy the game. And it's actually free to play. So anybody who has, I think, Xbox, PS4 and PC could just download it and play it, which I think is great. And quite honestly, I've put probably at this point, maybe 6 hours into it. And out of all the battle royales that I played, I haven't played all of them, but it's easily my favorite. The controls are snappy. The squad based gameplay is a ton of fun. The character abilities are fun to use. And there's a lot of strategy too. Every situation that comes up, can be different from the last, depending on where you're at and who you're teamed up with. But the core idea is, you know, it's still battle royale, but everybody is set up in squads of three. There's only 60 players instead of 100. So the map is a little bit smaller, but it's still a gigantic map, of course.
It was pretty big. I was like, my God.
Even in the 6 hours I played, I still haven't fully recognized like where I am at any given time. They actually did an interesting thing, which is when you arrive in a new area, they put a title of where you just arrived in the top left corner, and they'll actually tell you what kind of loot is currently in that area. So, you know, I forget the names of them off the top of my head, but they'll say, you know, like, oh, this is the jungle base, and below it, it'll say there's mid-tier loot in this one. But sometimes when you go back to the same base in a later game, there'll be high-tier loot, and people will just be fighting over what's in there because you can get, you know, purple chest piece and that kind of thing. But yeah, it's a great game. Even when you're playing with randos online, it's still a ton of fun. And anybody out there who hasn't played a battle royale due to the fact that they just don't want to try it, they don't think it'd be fun, or people who may have played Fortnite or PUBG and, you know, didn't really, you know, clasp onto those as much as they thought they may have, I think they might really like this one because it has the polish of a Titanfall or a COD, but it's applied to a free-to-play game, which is just kind of unheard of, you know?
Right.
What do you think free-to-play? Go ahead.
One thing I noticed on your playthrough that I was watching is that the communication's really solid. You know, I mean, you know, it has the VoIP to text, which is interesting. I kept going, wow, look at where we've arrived, you know, 20 years on from Quake World, you know. now we've got like VoIP to text, and it doesn't work great, but that's still that they even do that in real time when you're playing a crazy, you know, basically a 60 player game. That just blows my mind. And so the communication, then also that you could flag, like, here's some, you know, for your teammates, here's some armor, you know, and things like that, just with a button press. That's very smart design. It looks very streamlined. It doesn't seem over encumbered, you know, visually. That's one thing that caught my attention. And again, I have not played it yet, but I think that's on today's to-do list for sure. With my 16-year-old, I begged him, like, hey, will you play with me and show me the ropes?
Please make time for your father.
Yeah, come on, kiddo. So hopefully I'll be playing that. But yeah, I just thought the communication, the presentation, the art direction, obviously it already has, you know, kind of a lore to it, you know, from Titanfall. So it looks really... It really caught me. And I will say, I think it's the team play thing out of all of them, because if it was just, you know, you're flying solo like PUBG, I think that's something that attracts me. I know Fortnite, you can team up, I'm assuming, but just from, I don't know too much about Fortnite. I've seen it plenty of times,
right?
I just kind of went, oh, kid game, I'm out of here. But I don't mean that in a derogatory way. I mean, it's true. I mean, there's a lot of young kids playing that game that have kind of grown up from Minecraft, which is a safe, okay game that parents are happy for them to play. And now a couple years on, they're a little bit older. They want a little bit something more intense. And I think it's just it's very smart. You know, it's a smart design, and maybe it happened accidentally, but I don't know. These companies,
I don't know. Hey, the numbers don't lie. That's for sure.
I mean, they're doing something right. So, but I thought, you know, the squad of three is really fascinating, because getting one more person to play with you is kind of tough sometimes, but you can always, you know, get two buddies to play that are gaming that night. So, it does look really compelling to me. So I will report back. I do have a quick question for you though. The banner, those big banners. So they change when your squad enters. Is that what it is? And it changes to you, or is it more like a interactive, like a leaderboard thing?
Now, are you talking about the banners they show in game when you're running around?
Correct. So if you guys went to a base in one of your matches that was kind of up in the kind of in a plateau kind of area where you're up kind of high, and then these giant banners are up on the wall, and they kind of go from red, you know, from the logo, and then they show faces, and I'm assuming that's you guys or the leaderboard. What is that?
So that's actually the leaderboard. So at the beginning of every match, they actually have, I forget what the terminology is, but they have the kill leader or whoever it is. And it's whoever came into the game and really did well their last game. So they'll be like, this is the person that came in first last game.
Go get him. Go kill him.
And that's basically it, because you get more XP for killing that person. So they become the hunted, really.
That's interesting.
Yeah, so they have them plastered up there. But the new kill leader comes up with whoever kills that person. So if he gets killed or she gets killed, then they're like, you'll hear a big announcement that goes, a new kill leader, and then new banners show up up top there.
Okay,
cool. Which shows the new team, which is kind of cool.
So no hitting tab to see who's the... you just see it in the game, which is kind of an interesting concept. That's kind of fun.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, they keep you in the game at all times.
That's great.
Yeah, I think that's sort of like what they were trying to do, is keep your eyes focused on what's in front of you, because at any moment an enemy might spot you and try to take you out. So you gotta stay with it, I think. But that's free to play, awesome. I recommend checking it out. I think it's a ton of fun.
Cool. That's great. Well,
but Dump Truck, haven't you been playing another game, an older classic?
Oh yeah. You know, I'm trying to game more often. I've said this to you a few times, but I'm just trying to, you know, I can't devote all my spare time to Quake. I'm not burned out. I'm definitely not burned out. I love Quake. It's in my DNA. But I think creatively, it's better to kind of play something else. Just like if you're writing, you should be reading other things. You know, like if you're writing prose or whatever, if you're writing a novel, you really should be kind of reading true to life things. You know, and just try to, you know, kind of get your brain working in another area. Same with filmmaking and all that. So
yeah,
I figured, hey, for creative reasons, you know, first of all, I have a list of dozens and dozens of games that I've started that I really want to go back to and over the years. And one of those games was Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube. I know it's on PC. I gotta say, if a game is on a console, for the most part, especially single player, I will play the console version, because I need to sit back in my beanbag or my couch or whatever and relax. And I don't want to be sitting at a desk, because that's what I do all day long. So even sometimes mapping, I'm like, God, I wish I could stand up and do it like in VR or something, you know, which, you know, one day we'll have it.
One day. Definitely.
People are doing it probably as we speak. But so Resident Evil 4 on the GameCube. So I got this HDMI adapter. I did get I think I told you last week, I got the digital sound going. It sounds so awesome too. It really does. It's like makes a huge difference from RCA connectors to like Dolby Pro Logic surround with proper, you know, separation and everything. It sounds really cool. So, and Resident Evil is just one of those games I always wanted to play through. It has the vibe I like. It's very dark. It is hectic and crazy, as you know. Not telling anybody anything new, but that's, so I'm playing it in little short bursts. It's going to take me probably a year at the rate I'm going, but I'm doing okay. I'm doing better. And it's fun to play on the GameCube controller and have that. It doesn't look fantastic, but it looks much better than composite video. So,
in digital audio though, you get to hear the guy say, "What are you buying?"
Yeah, like, I know.
What are you selling?
What are you buying? I love it. I have a funny thing. I read this this author, Richard Flanagan, and he's Australian. He's from Tasmania, and so
that's a good Australian accent.
I'm always doing that goofy accent all the time around my wife, and she's like, "Just stop it, please stop it." I'm like, "We're going to Tizzy, our next vacation, our next holiday. We're going to Tizzy." So
that's great.
Yes, it's horrible, and it gets worse as I talk more. But yeah,
so. I love it.
What you buying?
don't be a Sheila.
So anyway, so there's that, and then the other night.
So how far have you gotten into it?
Oh my gosh! So all right, let's see. I'm about 4 hours of gameplay in, and I think Where am I at? I got to the church. Which is probably like a half an hour in, probably, for other players.
Well, the funny thing is I've owned that game since it came out, because I think I got it for like $20, like a year after it came out or something on GameCube. But I think I got to the river monster, and I defeated the river monster and got past it. And then I don't know that I ever played it anymore after that. So that's right. As far as I ever got.
I'm just a little past that section. So,
okay.
And we were talking about, you know, historical gameplay videos. I knew about the earlier episodes, the other earlier games like Resident Evil and 2 and all that. I just watched this great documentary. I'll have to find the link and post it, but on the series. And it was just really in-depth, like hour-long thing about all the games. And it was just so great. And you're just like, God, I want to play some of these games. It's amazing.
Totally.
But I will say I chose the right one. You know, this is the one that is the watershed in the series. So if you're going to play Resident Evil, I think that's the one, regardless of whether you play it. I mean, it's coming out on the Switch, which is insane. You know, it looks great too. I mean, the HD kind of quote unquote remaster is just a port from some of these other versions, but you know, it's one of those ones where I've gone to the store and picked it up like the Wii version and I've looked on, you know, Steam and went, maybe should I get it? Can you use the Steam controller? And so I'm really happy that I stuck with my guns and I'm playing the original GameCube version. So, and I don't really.
You picked it up at the store and the guy came up behind you and was like, "What are you buying?
What are you buying?" Yeah, exactly. So I'm going to finish that damn game. It might take a year, but I'll finish it.
Cool.
Yeah. I'm like geeking out when I look at the textures in the game, because I'm like, ooh, that would look good in Quake. Like, we've got to find that somewhere out there in the world.
Man, Resident Evil 4 textures would look good in Quake.
They really would. It's got the it's very similar color palette. So.
Very cool.
Yeah.
Did you say there was another game you've been checking out as well?
Yeah, I have one of the Super NES retro, whatever they call those things. What are they called? What is that thing?
Classic? The mini?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Well, that's what it is. I'm just trying to, what do they call those things? Anyway.
I don't know. Nintendo's weird Retro with their naming stuff. Bob.
Yeah, I know exactly. Yeah. Super Mario Brothers 2 Wii Special Edition or something. Like, what the hell?
Yeah, the newest one. That's what it was. It was like new Super Mario Brothers Wii U Switch Deluxe Edition or something. I was just what is this?
It's like, what are these people high? We have 256 characters. We're going to use all of them, you know.
You're using all of them and then some.
Right. No, so there's games on that mini, you know, I know people emulate and all that stuff, but to me, just like you were saying, as far as like getting the game to work, it's like getting an emulator to work on your PC the way you could just put the damn disc in and play or spend what, 30, 40, 50 bucks on this thing and just plug it into your TV. So I just I don't have time to tinker like that, and also the user experience. Usually I have never emulated something perfectly. It just doesn't, I know it's out there and you can do it, and it probably gets better and better every day with all these developers working on this stuff, but I don't want to deal with that, you know?
So, yeah, you got to put in the time for that for sure.
So I'd rather play the hardware. And so I played this mini and I fired up, Super Metroid, which I have never really played a 2D Metroid game. I've played Prime and I can't remember the one that was on Wii, but there was a third one on the Wii, if I remember.
I think it was Prime 3.
Yeah, it was just Prime 3, probably. So I played that on the Wii, and that was actually really fun on the Wii. It was fun. And we played Metroid Prime when my kids were little and loved that game. That makes me want to play it again.
Yeah, it's a classic.
And I played a little tiny bit of Echoes. I don't even know if we own that. I think we might have rented it or something. I don't know. But So I'd never played the 2D, and I'm like, I really should play this and give it a try. And I was throwing the controller the other night. I was like, are you effing kidding me? So what I wasn't glomming onto is that the jump mechanic is so different, you know, than what I'm used to, like with Mario. Like, you hold it down and you jump higher, of course, right?
But right.
If you hit jump and you move left or right, you spin and you do a different kind of jump, that as opposed to just holding it down and then moving the controller. Am I speaking your language, RC? Do you know what I'm talking about?
I think so. It's been a while since I played Super Metroid, so
oh my God.
I forget.
Yeah, so just that fact alone, I'm like, oh, duh. You're an idiot, dude. So I was struggling mightily with that. And then last night I fired it up and I got the mechanic down. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. This is cool. And then I was like, you know, I'm so exhausted. I don't want to play this. I fired up your channel, watched a bunch of your videos, and went to bed.
That's so funny.
This is like all these guys in their 20s and 30s playing video games and playing Quake and mapping for Quake. This is your future. I am your future. You understand this? Like, you're going to get hemorrhoids and you're going to have aches and pains, and it's just...
You're going to have kids and they're going to show you up when you're playing games. And
kids are great. Kids are great. Until they become teenagers and they're not kids anymore.
Right. That's a whole other ball game, right?
Exactly.
I remember being a teenager, I had this discussion with somebody in college where I said, like, I think maybe it was just after college, regardless, we were talking about, like, yeah, you know, we were teenagers, we were all jerks to our parents and whatever. And this one girl was like so staunch on, like, no, I wasn't. I've always loved my parents. I've always been nice. So I was like, well, you were a jerk at some points. I mean, you were a teenager. We all were. And she's like, nope. I was always nice. And I never trusted that girl after that.
I was going to say, that's the one that goes postal and goes nuts and stabs her boyfriend,
right,
cuts off some kind of appendage at some point in the future.
Because if you're honestly that nice to everybody through high school, you're definitely like keeping everything in. You're bottling it all up until, you know, someday, whew, something bad's going to happen.
I know. I've got people in my life that are super nice and happy. And I'm like, this can't be the way. They must go home and kick their dog. There's no way this guy is this nice all the time.
Right? Totally.
Oh,
well,
man.
Speaking of nice, we're going to talk about a game that our community absolutely loves and thinks is the nicest game probably ever released, which is Quake. In a way that, you know, we got this question from Muzzboz, and he wants to know, you know, what we think about Quake. Like, why do we still play it? Why we think it's so good? Like I said at the beginning of the show, it's almost like a loaded question, because we have the community. Obviously, there's several different reasons and factors as to why we still play it today. But I think it might be an interesting question just to ask between the two of us, like, why we still play it, why we still keep coming back to it. Dump Truck, you know, it's a tough topic to start, but
for me, you know, go ahead. No, you go first, because I mean, I definitely I've actually kind of come across these conversations fairly recently, so I'd like to hear what you have to say.
Well, I know for me, a lot of it for in games in general always comes down to control and how fun it is to actually play a game, because I know that there are gamers out there who they claim that story is number one for them in games. And I full transparency, most of the time, I don't really care at all about the story. Like, story for me is second or third on the list of, like, game number one has to be fun. That's all there is to it. And Quake is a ton of fun to play. That's where it comes down to.
Right.
Like, the mechanics and the jumping and the falling and the weapons and everything. Like, the weapons in Quake feel really good to shoot, you know?
Right.
And it feels fun to rocket jump when you get a chance to rocket jump. Finding secrets feels good, you know, when you find one. You get that little sound and everything. It triggers that little thing in your brain where you're like, ooh, you know?
yep.
But overall, for me,
health pack.
Health pack. But for me, overall, it's just the gameplay and the feel of the game that that keeps me coming back to it, because man, over the past 5 years of playing Quake on my channel, I put in, God, it's had to have been close to 1,000 hours of Quake at this point, if not more. I haven't counted it, but yeah, it's been a lot.
I would imagine you're way up there. I mean, you've got hour-long episodes with multiple maps and
sometimes 3 hour episodes. Yeah. So, but that's what keeps me coming back. What about you, Dump Truck?
Well, that is definitely one of the reasons. And I think it's so funny because I've always followed, Carmack, you know, John Carmack and the other guys that were part of it, but yeah. Carmack, you know, this is something that I really have to keep in mind at all times. If you want to be smarter, you got to listen to smart people. You have to pay attention to what they say. And it's a stupid, it's a really, you know, simplistic kind of view, but it's true. You know, if you want to learn something, you listen to John Carmack. And so it's so funny that he, even to this day, he is talking, when he's talking about VR with Oculus, he's talking to, you know, the motion to photon response time. And I don't even know half of what that means, but he's talking about what, you know, the time that you to put an input, let's say like in a controller or move your head, let's say for VR, and how long does it take to get from that action through the machine to the pixel, which becomes a photon that hits the back of your retina. And so that's what he's talking about, but he's been talking about this stuff since the Quake, probably since Doom, but in public since Quake. And he really, you know, was really focused on the feel of these games and especially Quake 3. I remember reading a bunch of stuff. So the feeling of the game has to be perfect. That is why, you know, this week I also played Super Mario World on that device that I bought. And you cannot beat, I'll try all kinds of side scrolling jumpers, but I always go back to Mario because of the feel. It's just tight as a drum. And that's, you know, just like you said with Quake, it's the same thing. But I gotta say, there's a lot more to it for me personally. And I just, like, it's a continuum for me. Someone said, oh, the only reason why, this is on Reddit, the only reason why you'd go back to Quake is, you know, for nostalgia. I'm like, no, not really. No, not, no. That's not it. I'm not trying to relive my youth because it's long time. I'm pretty immature, so I'm pretty youthful anyway, but.
There you go.
Right. You know, so no, it's not that at all. That's a ridiculous notion. I think there's technology involved. You know, the reason I'm back in the Quake community is because of software development by Sleepwalker and Eric W. That's the reason they built these amazing tools and added new things to lighting and mapping and all that stuff that I love. And so it's a technological kind of techno nerd thing. And it always has been. I saw this first screenshot of Quake years ago when I was a Doom player, I was like, oh, look at the shadows. And that looks so amazing. You know, I remember seeing that. And I think one of the reasons Quake is so revered is because it was pretty much, as far as I know, the first IP-based, you know, client-server kind of architecture for a multiplayer game. So it made all these ways that were such a drag to connect to playing Doom over like a modem. It just negated all those things because all you needed was an IP address and you're ready to, you could play multiplayer like that. Like, I've said this on the show before, I'm pretty sure, but I remember the first time I played Q-Test and I was on a server with someone in the Netherlands or Sweden or wherever it was. I don't remember, but I was just floored. I'm like, I am playing in real time. A little janky, it was a little laggy, but I am in there chatting and shooting weapons at someone on the other side of the planet. And that was the revelation. So, and it was, it's easy to discount that, but that started the game industry. Forget just FPSs. It started the game industry we all enjoy and talk about every day. It really jump-started it. Let's put it that way.
No, I think you're right. Yeah. I mean, the whole, you know, what was the Doom program? Was it Durango?
Duango. Yeah.
Duango. So that and coupled with, you know, Quake, you know, playing online and then Quake World eventually, whatever. I mean, that really jump-started where we're at now, especially, you know, you look at Apex Legends, for instance. That game would not be a thing today without what it did with the online stuff, for sure.
Right. And you're talking about going back to it. I mean, I kind of got off the rails there, but But yeah, I think that's part of it, is coming back, because there's innovations and mods and things that, you know, it's a platform that you can build on. And other games do it better, you know, like Minecraft, and these kind of games are better platforms and they're easier points of entry for mods and things like that. But I don't know, I'm obsessed with Quake just because, you know, it's where I got the bug bit me, you know.
Yeah, no, totally. So for you, it sounds like you're still playing it because you're just so interested in sort of like the nuance of internal design and programming and mapping and that kind of thing, right?
That's a large part of it. Huge part. But also seeing people's creativity, you know. It's not other games are the same way. I'm just plugged into Quake. I do think the atmosphere and the art direction, even though it's like, if you read up on the game and the making of the game, it was a mess. I mean, it was a total it was painful for Romero, you know. It's like, it was his last game and it was a rush job. And, you know, I've read up and seen videos on him talking about, you know, how bittersweet it was to hit, you know, upload that last thing, because the shareware version, because that was it. You know, he knew it was the end of an era and it was gone, and he put blood, sweat, and tears in that game, but it was time to leave. And like, I don't think all that, you know, you tie emotions to these things too. You have to remember, it's just not an entity. You haven't, that's part of the nostalgia thing. You have, an emotional connection to these things from your youth, but there's a lot more to it than that, you know?
Oh, certainly.
So I lost my train of thought, as I often do.
No, that's okay though. I think you're making good points about it though. I mean, you know, Quake hasn't survived this long without being, you know, a good game. And I think that's really what it comes down to. Like I know a lot of other people agree with you as far as like the game being, you know, open-ended, in that you can make maps and that kind of stuff for it. You know, it's open source, so it's like they give you the source, people can make ports and everything. And I know that is one of the things that the community complains about with a lot of newer games that do come out, where they're like, you know, all of these AAA games that come out, they may be fun to play, but then when you're done playing them, that's it, you're done. With Quake, you could finish the campaign and then you could go and download all of these crazy and cool and awesome maps and mods that people have been making for the past 20 years. So the game just, you could keep playing Quake for years and never get bored, which is, I guess we're proof in that, right?
Yeah, no, exactly. And I think it's also like an economic thing with PC gaming. I'd love to hear from people in the audience listening about this, because I'm very fortunate. I have the resources to like build a nice gaming PC every, I don't know, about 5 years. I usually wait, you know, until it's really a big, it's a really big jump, or if my machine croaks or whatever. But you know, so I'm very fortunate that I'm able to do that. But I know other people that are younger, just getting started out in their lives and their careers, you know, they've got maybe an older machine or a laptop or what have you, and Quake just runs on those things. I mean, it's it might even just be an economic thing, that there's a certain limitation to what you can run on your machine. And since there are these new engines that you can play at higher res and make it look nice and yada, yada, all that stuff. You know, I think that might be a part of it. I'd love to hear people's opinions on that as well.
So. I would too. And I would like to hear people's opinions on how they feel about Quake and why they think it's so good and why they stick with it. So definitely, if you guys are in Discord, you know, PM one of us, let us know your thoughts on why you think Quake is good, and email us at the email address, which is quakecast@gmail.com. And let us know your opinion, because we will definitely have a show in the future where we read through what everybody thinks. I think we're going to get some really interesting answers, like you were saying. I do think that there are a lot of different factors in play for people and why they stick with it. I'm sure some people are more tuned to the story than I am, you know, I would love to hear from those people as well.
Yeah, but, there were some comments this morning, actually, about the lore and things on Funk that I read this morning on Funk Message Board that was kind of amusing. They were talking about, you know, when do you think it takes, like, when do you think Quake takes place? Like, what year? And I was like, wow, I've never even thought of that.
Cool. That is an interesting question.
Yeah, but I just want to shout out to MuzzBoz one more time, because he's emailed us a couple really great suggestions, and you know, plus one, good game, all that. And we're looking into your other suggestions, just so you know.
Definitely.
Yeah. So hit us up, people.
Yeah, we are listening. We are reading. So get with us.
Get with it, people.
Yeah, get with it, huh? Well, right. Dump Truck, I think we have come to the end of today's episode.
Yes.
And it's been a pleasure as always.
As always, yes. I love talking to you, even whether it's on the show or offline. And
likewise.
Yeah. So it's a big hug fest. Let me. I should for the Terra Fusion crowd. I should probably insult you or something. Kind of come up with something. No, never mind.
You should definitely swear more and insult my mom in some grotesque manner.
I can bring out the mom. Well, I already did.
Oh.
You see, I'm so bad at it. We're so nice. Both of us. We're just so nice.
Oh, man. And, sir, we, of course, will reconvene on the next episode of the Quakecast. See y'all then.
This is RC. Thanks for listening to the Quakecast. You can find me on YouTube at youtube.com/watchGGRC.
And I'm Dump Truck. You can find me on YouTube. Just search for Dump Truck _DS.